It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pens the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Half past the hour on a Monday, and that means it's time we speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from SUNY Albany. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Cold but happy.
Cold and happy. Is it still snowed in?
Fortunately, no, but it was in the single digits again today, so we're just trying to stay bundled up.
Oh, my gosh. And me, I was walking in shirt sleeves out here in Portland. It's 60 and sunny. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, folks, get your questions ready in our chat room. We're taking them now, or you can call in to 971-533-7111. But we always give Dr. Mitch the first word to tell us what's the latest in cannabis science.
A veritable plethora in the news today, everything from ADHD to skunk and psychosis, the biology of the munchies, and more professional ratings suggesting marijuana's probably a lot safer than we were told in junior high.
Let's get to that first. That's the one I saw on the Washington Post Wonk blog today, saying marijuana may be even safer than previously thought. What are the details of this study?
What's interesting is this is at least the third attempt to try to sort of rate drugs by their harmfulness, but using relatively different techniques. And on this one, cannabis, of course, is markedly safer than alcohol, heroin, cocaine, tobacco, ecstasy, and meth. But that's really not any surprise to us. But it wasn't the usual approach Bob Gore and I took, or that David Nutt had taken in a comparable study, and still comes to the same conclusion. So I feel like basically this kind of ranking approach, no matter how you do it, seems to keep come to the same conclusion that marijuana is just not going to be a big problem.
Well, it was interesting. One of the lines in there said that marijuana is 114 times less lethal than alcohol. But, I mean, isn't it infinitely less lethal since you can't die from it?
I mean, in truth, that 114, as big as that sounds, is kind of an underestimate. The occasional, you know, cannabis-induced tachycardia right before a heart attack is getting a lot of play. But compared to alcohol, this drug just doesn't have any association with death at all.
Oh, sorry, we're having some chaos in the studio. Bacon Man has just come in, and Roscoe has gone crazy. So sorry for all the barking in the background. That's our alarm system hard at work. Very low tech here at 420 Radio. Let's get to this next study. This one came out a week or two ago, and it said that there was no link between marijuana and car crash accidents. And this was pretty surprising because, you know, Kevin Sabet tells me we're twice as likely to get in wrecks, and, you know, he wouldn't lie.
Well, unfortunately, Kevin's not on top of the data. But the bottom line here is that, in fact, when you take really good care to check out the National Highway statistics for a specific area where people are actually under the influence of marijuana at the time, what a surprise. You see at most a 5% increase in culpability of accidents, and it's just not statistically significant. This was a study of over 3,000 drivers. The crashes were in a 20-month period, so we can't say, oh, hey, the study's not big enough, or there just weren't enough people or something like that. And lo and behold, we're not getting the kinds of increases anywhere near what you get at blood alcohol concentrations even at 0.02 or 0.04. And I really feel like, you know, I'm all for a highway sobriety test. If you want to pull me over and have me juggle and ride a unicycle, I'm happy to do it. But just the presence of cannabis in the system is not enough to assume impaired driving.
So what accounts for that statistic that they've been throwing at us for years that we're twice as likely? I mean, they used to say it was from the British Medical Journal. How did they come up with this two times greater risk?
Well, so what was funny was in the early 2000s, they had a big data set based on a couple of different areas, but they were using basically urine screens, so some of the folks weren't high at the time. They also often were confounding alcohol and cannabis and trying to control for that statistically, which just doesn't make any sense from a mathematical standpoint. And so we get this, you know, 12 times as likely, 2 times as likely, and things like that. And in fact, a good epidemiologist, when something is less than twice as big, isn't going to make a huge deal out of that sort of effect. And that was pretty much what we were getting. And it really was statistically significant only because the sample sizes were so huge.
You know, along those lines, we got a question from our chat room asking that we don't have a general roadside impairment test yet. Why not?
Well, what's intriguing is at least some of the roadside sobriety tests that we've used for alcohol can be adapted pretty readily to detect cannabis-related impairments. But the notion that, oh, you're going to, you know, have a sort of breathalyzer-type test the way we have with alcohol just isn't panning out. And I think the science is probably just a little bit behind on that. What I would prefer, of course, is something that correlates with driving ability regardless of the source of impairment. So if you were too tired, or if you took a Benadryl, or, you know, if you were on anything or under any kind of circumstances where you weren't capable of driving, it would detect it no matter what. And that, you know, regardless of what was in your system, it would just be what is your capability to actually drive.
All right, we've got another study. This one comes from across the pond, and it's warning us that the super potent hyper not your father's Woodstock weed skunk is going to cause psychotic episodes. I'm ready to go psycho any moment, Dr. Mitch. Tell me it's not true.
Well, sad but true. The headlines are all saying can cause or things like that, and that just is not a kind of explanation we can make from these data. All these are correlational and correlational alone. We have no idea if folks who are prone to psychosis are just attracted to skunk in the first place, which actually, given some of THC's and CBD's effects, may actually, you know, make some sense. So with this kind of correlational approach, the causal reasoning has got to go out the window. Now, we have seen that, you know, some high potency THC with no cannabidiol at all in the lab has made people have some psychotic-like experiences, but it's not the same as causing a psychotic disorder. And then what really bothers me is then some sources in the news are saying it's schizophrenia, and this is not schizophrenia at all. Schizophrenia is a really serious syndrome with a whole lot of symptoms, not just the kind of modest magical ideation or delusional thinking that we see in response to THC.
All right. There's one other interesting study that purports to tell us how pot gives people the munchies. I mean, we know it does, but why?
Well, what's curious is this one actually was one of those things where they weren't actually looking for a cannabis-related finding. They were actually trying to understand satiety, how we, you know, feel full. And it led them down this path where they ended up using one of the synthetic cannabis things. And I don't want to make too much of this because it's really not THC they're playing with. They're playing with CB1 agonists that are full agonists that really get those neurons to fire. And what they found was, you know, the poor rodents ate that rodent chow, which can't be particularly appetizing, 3 or 4 times as much as they usually would. Obviously, the mechanism that they proposed are these certain POMC neurons. They actually are usually part of how you stop eating. And so to get them to react in this way was pretty novel and a pretty interesting finding. But it's a few steps away from actual human munchies related to cannabis because it's both a strong CB1 agonist and it's really not people.
All right. And this other story that I found quite interesting, had to do with teens who use marijuana who are suffering from ADHD and a computer program that could possibly help them out. This seems pretty complex. Maybe you can break it down for us.
Sure. What they're using here is what's called the NBAC task, which is a way to train your memory to essentially work better, to be able to hold more in your working memory. If you can imagine, Russ, I've got a series of pluses and minuses I'm going to flash on the screen, and I'm going to ask you, what was the symbol 2 before the one you're looking at right now? Obviously, that's going to be pretty tough, but it's something that you would get better at with practice. Folks with ADHD hate this task. I mean, hate it. And they actually do get better. It's unclear if it's going to generalize to paying attention to this task to paying attention in daily life, but there are at least some promising small sample studies that suggest it could improve with this kind of training. Now, the cannabis-using folks, some of the work that my student Mallory has done and some other work suggests that this particular sustained attention issue is one that people who use marijuana in response to ADHD seem to claim marijuana helps with, and so they may be a good target for this kind of training in order to improve their symptoms simply by improving their working memory abilities.
That's really fascinating. You know, I saw a special recently with Penn Jillette, the Vegas entertainer, and he had a nail gun. And if you have a nail gun, they have these strips of nails that are fed into the nail gun, but the nail gun will still fire air if there isn't a nail in one particular hole. And the entire act was a memory act where he has memorized the pattern of nail, nail, no nail, no nail, nail, no nail, nail, you know, and so forth along this strip. It must have been 70 or 80 nails long. And he's holding a nail gun up to his hand and up to people's heads as he's doing this act. And of course, when he pulls the trigger and it's just a hole, no nail comes through. I guess it could also be noted that Penn Jillette has never touched a drug in his life. I don't know if I'd want to try this after my history of using marijuana, Dr. Mitch. Is this something that could help people that even don't have ADHD?
In fact, it's interesting because working memory does improve, and it's curious because you'll find yourself after this kind of training capable of just holding a lot of information in your mind at once in a way that you hadn't, say, 3 months earlier. And it's an intriguing effect, but it's not essential to the kinds of jobs you and I have, Russ. So, I mean, if we're going to start doing performances in Las Vegas, maybe things would be different, or if we want to compete in the Memory Olympics. But otherwise, you know, if you don't have any ADHD symptoms, it's unclear that there's a whole lot of benefit to putting out this kind of effort.
All right. Well, Dr. Mitch Earlywine is one of the acknowledged experts on marijuana research. And if you'd like to get in touch with him directly, you can always send him an email at 420research@gmail.com. Have you got any new studies coming up?
In fact, the edibles data that everybody's been so helpful with are finally getting analyzed. And my new grad student, Stacy Farmer, is going to take a close look at those this week. And then we're interviewing our prospective grad students for the following year, so we may be a little slow on the uptake, but I'll get those results out to everybody as soon as I can.
It's got to be a huge list to get on to be Dr. Mitch's grad student, doesn't it?
I got to admit, there are a few people who wanted to make it to interview weekend who aren't going to make it.
Oh, well, good luck to everybody who did make it. Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.
All right, folks, stay tuned for the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. And following that, we've got time for a radical rant. Understanding the spectrum of getting high. Why is that so important to making sure prohibitionists understand where we're coming from? Stay tuned.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.